Broadcasting live from the Buckhead Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Legal Experts.
I am your host, Emily Rowell with attorneyofficespace.com. We also have Rich Casanova here with Buckhead Business Radio X in the background, working as the producer slash engineer today. Our special guests today are Lindley Jones, the current president of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association, and Darren Penn, the president-elect of the GTLA. Welcome to both of you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
We also have Chris Kelleher in the background. He is the communications director of GTLA, and he may chime in later on in the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. We will be talking today about the GTLA, of course, and also a little bit about the guests and their practices that they have. And stay tuned, because later in the show, we will be taking a different look at the infamous hot coffee case, the lady who sued McDonald's for burning her with hot coffee. So that's going to be really interesting. I'm looking forward to that. Let's start with Lindley Jones, the current president of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association. I'll start with a little bit of a bio. Lindley Jones is one of Atlanta's most distinguished trial lawyers. She has an AV rating, the highest professional rating available from the Martindale-Hubbell Lawyers Directory. With over 20 years of experience, her law practice is focused on legal malpractice, and she was the first woman in the United States to be board certified in legal malpractice by the American Board of Professional Liability Attorneys, the ABA's certifying body. She also handles wrongful death and personal injury cases with a particular focus on brain and spinal cord injuries. Ms. Jones was admitted to the Georgia Bar in 92 after graduating from Georgia State University Law School, where she was political editor of the Georgia State University Law Review. In addition to practicing with Lindley Jones, PC, Ms. Jones has served as legal analyst at CNN Headline News. She is a president of the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association and is a member of the Atlanta Trial Lawyers Society, Atlanta Bar Association, Lawyers Club of Atlanta, and the American Association for Justice, formerly Association of Trial Lawyers of America. And welcome, Lindley. Great to have you here. I'm going to go ahead and ask a few questions to get started, and then we'll go over your bio, Darren, as well. Let me just ask you, could you start by telling us a little bit about the Georgia Trial Lawyers Association and what your organization does?
The Georgia Trial Lawyers Association is an organization of over 2,000 trial lawyers in the state of Georgia. It was founded in 1956 to represent not only trial lawyers and to train them and educate them and so forth, but also to represent the interests of people in jury trial proceedings and to protect the Seventh Amendment right to jury trial through political activity, through education of the public, and so forth.
Okay, that's very interesting. What are some of the benefits that attorneys receive by becoming a member of the GTLA?
Well, the greatest benefit for the lawyer is really the legal education that's available. We have continuing legal education programs. Those run year-round. We have some that are here in town that are a day long or 2 days long or just a lunch and learn. We have programs that are out of town. We have one called Ski LA that's out west every winter, and you can go and get your legal education and ski the slopes.
Wonderful.
We have another one during the summer that's hosted at various beach destinations. Mm-hmm. And so you can take your family to that one. That's a very family-friendly one, and get your legal education there. So the legal education, I think, is the number one benefit. To the lawyers and to the public. Mm-hmm. GTLA is the number one defender of the Seventh Amendment right to jury trial.
Okay. That is very important. You mentioned that GTLA has very active legislative outreach and advocacy programs. Can you tell us more about what those entail?
GTLA has not only the active support of all 2,000-plus trial lawyers in defending the Seventh Amendment right to jury trial when legislation is proposed that would damage or harm it or impinge upon it, but also has a team of top lobbyists whose job it is to identify and fight against any legislation that would impact negatively the right to trial by jury.
Okay. And I wanted to find out just a little bit more about you. So you've been practicing law quite a long time, and I wanted to find out, how did you get into the practice originally?
Well, I wanted to be a journalist, but I didn't get a job. But I really think that it's the same. It comes from the same place. I was interested in investigative journalism and mm-hmm. and helping to see justice get done and wrongdoing exposed. And I didn't get that job when I came out of college. And so I thought, well, what else can I do that would achieve the same goals of seeing justice get done? And the obvious answer for me mm-hmm. at that time was become a trial lawyer. And so I did.
Wonderful. Awesome. And I'm going to go ahead and introduce Mr. Darren Penn and give a quick bio for you, and that way we can get some more questions underway. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you for being here. As a partner at Harris Penn Lowry, LLP, Darren has one goal in mind, to make a difference in the lives of his clients. Over the years, he has attended hundreds of favorable verdicts, influenced critical changes in safety regulations and legislation, as well as manufacturing and big business practices in this country, which have positively impacted the lives of countless consumers and business owners. After receiving both his undergraduate and law degrees from the University of Georgia, Darren began his career in 1994 with the litigation department at State Farm Insurance Companies. Often acting as lead counsel, Darren gained experience with cases involving automobile wrecks, premises liability, coverage disputes, as well as fire, theft, and homeowners claims. In January 2006, Darren joined with his friends and current partners Jeff Harris and Steve Lowry to establish Harris Penn Lowry. Since that time, HPL has grown into one of the most well-known, respected trial firms in the Southeast with a solid record of success. So what made you become a lawyer?
Well, I actually was pre-med in undergrad and wanted to be a doctor, and then I ran into that course called organic chemistry, and it pretty much ended all of my hopes and dreams of being a doctor. But I had always been drawn to the courtroom drama and to the whole idea of representing somebody in a court of law and standing up for them, speaking for them, and trying to reach a good result for them at the end of the day. And it was something that was I had always been drawn to it, and I knew that that's what I wanted to do. And in fact, when I started my practice or my career doing defense work, I knew eventually that one day I wanted to represent the individuals
Wonderful.
And small businesses as well.
Good. Well, thank you so much for being here. So let me ask this question to you. There have been several attempts in recent years to pass legislation to limit plaintiffs' ability to seek justice through the courts, so-called tort reform legislation. Some of those bills would prevent plaintiffs from having juries' fellow citizens hear their cases. What are some of those proposals that you have fought against over the past few years?
Yes, one of my positions with GTLA is I'm actually co-legislative chair as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Every year, unfortunately, there are a number of bills that are introduced in the legislature that attempt to limit the right to a trial by jury. Mm-hmm. This last session, we saw a number of bills that were introduced. There was a bill that was introduced called the Patient Injury Act, which essentially would completely do away with any medical malpractice litigation in the state of Georgia.
Wow.
And patients, therefore, would not have a right to a jury trial, and it would in turn subject their cases to a panel of medical professionals that would decide whether what their fate is in those
wow.
cases. There were a couple of bills related to nursing homes that would affect our most vulnerable citizens in the state, the elderly.
Mm-hmm.
One of those tried to impose a mandatory arbitration clause, which would again take away the right to a jury trial and mandate that those cases would be heard by a single individual, or sometimes it's a panel of arbitrators up to three. But again,
wow.
professionals rather than
peers,
right, ordinary citizens, and there are a number every year. There are a number of bills that seek immunity for different interests and different groups.
Mm-hmm.
You name it. There was a bill that was introduced this year that would have provided immunity to MARTA. There was a bill that was introduced that would provide immunity to cemeteries of all places. There's also a bill that was introduced that would, it's called the Discovery Limitations Bill, that literally would harm the ability of plaintiffs in lawsuits to discover information. Through the litigation process, one of the most important ways to get to the truth of the matter, of the legal matter, is through this process called discovery, where you learn information about the case and about the issues that are involved in the case. And this bill literally would have basically gutted the system that you have in Georgia, which would severely harm the ability to get to the truth.
Right. That just sounds like it's just taking away people's rights. I mean,
that's exactly
your
human
rights.
That's exactly what it is.
And so that's what the GTLA is all about. Excuse me. Let's talk about mandatory and binding arbitration. In your opinion, Lindley, what is wrong with the mandatory arbitration model, and why do you consider that to be less effective than a trial by jury?
There is no greater device that has been created by man for the resolution of disputes than the jury trial system. Mm-hmm. Now, our founding fathers knew that, and we at GTLA know it too. And when you talk to people on the street, well, they know it too.
Right.
But they don't always associate that with these different devices that are proposed that would take away that right. They don't always make that connection. But anything that takes away or limits the right of individuals to jury trial is a risk to the constitutional right. Mm-hmm. And that certainly includes arbitration. Arbitration, for folks who aren't familiar with it, is a private method by which a privately employed arbitrator, individual, lawyer, or judge, or panel of two or three of them, makes the decisions in lieu of a jury trial. And all these companies that write contracts and propose contracts that have all of that boilerplate that nobody ever reads, well, they insert in there provisions that allow them, instead of you getting to go to a jury trial if they do wrong by you, to require you to go to arbitration. And not only to go to arbitration, but to pay those arbitrators and to pay on top of that a lawyer to represent you at that arbitration. I believe that it's inefficient. A lot of people believe that it's inefficient, and that it's expensive and that it's not a good alternative. But the big picture is it limits the right to trial by jury, and that's the big problem with it.
Right, right. The interest groups that push for these measures claim that they are necessary in order to make Georgia a pro-business state. They even go as far as to claim that businesses are fleeing to other states because they have passed some of these laws that protect businesses from liability. What do you guys think about that? I'll let you answer that one.
Well, I think that's nonsense because Georgia is one of the greatest states for business in the United States, if not the greatest. And we have gotten so many awards here in the state of Georgia for being a wonderful state for business. But part of being a good state for business is also being a good state for people.
Correct.
And right. Because, you know, businesses employ people and their employees have to want to come there and be there and live
That's
there.
What it's all about.
Yeah. And so in the state of Georgia, we have a terrific leg up there. We have a wonderful state whose geography varies from one end to the other. There's something for everybody here and a great business climate with a lot of incentives for companies to come here. And we see more and more companies coming. And you only have to pick up the Atlanta Business Chronicle every day to see that we're attracting plenty of business. We don't need to damage constitutional rights to do that.
Right.
Well, and to add to that, all you have to do, I mean, you don't have to take our word for it. All you have to do is look at magazines like Forbes magazine or the television station CNBC and other publications that routinely rank states as far as being a business-friendly climate. Georgia consistently is either somewhere in the top 10, in many places in the top 5.
Right.
And never less than the top third. Never.
Do you feel that small business owners do want to be fair and they don't want to flee to other states?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question. And most folks, if you talk to them, are willing to be responsible for their own conduct or misconduct because they don't intend to commit misconduct, so they don't really need to be protected against committing misconduct in order to move their business to a place.
Right. Right.
Well, and small businesses, they're citizens as well, and they need a strong civil justice system just like individuals.
Exactly. They need the same representation as anybody else.
They certainly do.
Right.
And Emily, I do want to point out, if you've turned on your TV in the last 6 months during the campaign, you've probably already seen this, but a magazine named Site Selection, which is a magazine that a lot of CEOs and development planners use when deciding where to relocate businesses or where to open businesses, actually named Georgia the number one state for business in the whole country in 2014. And so clearly we're not having an issue attracting businesses because of our current laws.
Right, right. Well, that's good to know. We have all heard the term frivolous lawsuits, used to describe the abuse of the civil justice system by people who are looking for what your critics would call jackpot justice. How do you respond to the notion that a plaintiff's main goal in filing a lawsuit is to get rich?
I would say that's just absurd. And I've had the very good fortune to represent a lot of people and a lot of businesses and some government entities over the years, and I can assure you that their motivation is not something called jackpot justice. I don't even know what that is. What the motivation is for the civil justice system is to seek justice, and that is to seek justice for harm that is done, and to compensate for harm that is actually incurred. And what is important is having a very strong civil justice system that will help ensure that folks, small businesses, actually are able to get the full measure of whatever that is, whatever that justice is. And the beauty about the system is the ultimate regulators are the citizens that sit on the jury, and they decide, hey, this is what justice is in this case.
Right.
You know, it's not some schedule, or it's not some, you know, a cap here and there. They hear all of the evidence. Mm-hmm. They hear all of the facts, and they are given instructions on what the law is. They apply it. And you would be amazed how hard they work, juries, in our system, at trying to come up with what is justice in individual cases.
Good, good. Lindley, what do you think about the frivolous lawsuits?
Anytime you have a constitutional right, like the right to trial by jury, you have people who would abuse that constitutional right potentially. And so, for example, you take the Second Amendment right to bear arms, and you'll find people who will buy guns for the wrong reasons, participate in illegal activity with guns. We have laws that address that. And we, as a nation, have decided that the preservation of Second Amendment right to bear arms is more important to us than ensuring that nobody ever attempts to take advantage of a situation with a gun. Same thing is true with regard to the Seventh Amendment. It is possible that there have been folks who tried to file a frivolous lawsuit, but we have strict laws in place here in Georgia and nationally, but let's talk about Georgia. Mm-hmm. Here in Georgia, there are severe penalties for anyone who files anything that a court or a jury considers frivolous litigation. And so as a result of that, it is not a problem here in Georgia. And while you may hear the expression frivolous litigation, what you don't see are reports of runaway juries in Georgia or outrageous, unjustifiable verdicts that don't make any sense. Those stories don't come out of Georgia. Georgia has a handle on that, and that's not a problem here.
That's good. That's good. Krista, do you have anything to add to that?
Lindley about summed it up. That was great. I do want to point out quickly, though, that the headlines that you often read and the stories you see do not reflect the lion's share of litigation in Georgia. And the median award is $28,000 on a jury or a settlement. And you'll hear about these seven and eight figure verdicts and the way that the media gives them coverage, you'd think that is the norm in Georgia and around the country. But the fact of the matter is it's simply not. And more often than not, the plaintiffs barely are able to receive justice to cover their damages as is. And they're not, like you said, jackpot justice is a catchy phrase that has been propagated for many years. But at the end of the day, it's simply not the reality.
Well, and I'll just add to that. I think that what the statistics show for the state of Georgia also, when you're talking about seven and eight figure verdicts and, you know, these supposedly high dollar verdicts, I think the statistics say that only 4% of all plaintiffs in Georgia have verdicts in excess of $1 million. So, I mean, you're talking about a very small portion of any of the verdicts anyway. So,
okay, well, let's continue on about the frivolous lawsuits, which a lot of people thought the lady who sued McDonald's was a frivolous lawsuit after she spilled coffee on herself while she was driving. What do you guys say about that, Lindley?
Well, you know, that's become an urban myth. It's just blown up to the point that it's an urban myth, and the facts have been completely forgotten. She wasn't driving a vehicle. She was an elderly woman whose grandchild had taken her to get coffee at McDonald's, at a McDonald's that knew that it was serving that coffee, I believe, 40 degrees or more above the standard temperature for serving hot coffee. Now, they knew that. And they were serving that coffee, and I believe that the jury came to the conclusion they were doing it to save money so that people wouldn't come back for seconds.
Really?
I believe that's what the jury decided there, and they wanted to send a message that if you are going to serve coffee at an unacceptably hot temperature that is not in line at all with restaurant standards, and by the way, these things are addressed in restaurant standards, so
right.
You and I may turn on our Mr. Coffee and not have any idea what temperature coffee comes out of it,
right.
But you would sure know if it's served 40 degrees hotter and it spilled on you, because the difference is the difference between getting a flesh wound and getting third degree burns. Now, that lady, the vehicle was stopped. She was making her coffee in her lap. When it spilled, she got severe third degree burns throughout all of the areas of her lap and her private areas there.
Right.
And the injuries were so dramatic, and because they were private areas, you never saw the injuries. I mean, if you saw the grotesque injuries that that woman had as a result of a coffee spill, you might say, wow, something was really wrong there too.
Right.
And when that happened, she had to have skin grafts and a prolonged hospitalization, and the jury just said, who's going to pay for all of that health care? Is it going to be us as taxpayers, because she's elderly and she probably would get Medicare, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that
right.
crossed their minds. Or is it going to be McDonald's, who knew they were serving their coffee way, way too hot, and who knew that they had multiple very serious injuries by McDonald's throughout the McDonald's franchises and corporately owned stores because of the temperature at which they were serving their coffee. And so the jury decided to compensate her $200,000 for all of her medical bills and everything she'd been through. That doesn't shock anybody if you talk about those kinds of injuries. But then the jury did something else. They wanted to send a message to McDonald's, and you don't send a message to McDonald's with a $200,000 verdict.
Right.
That's nothing to them. That's probably half an hour's sale of French fries, right?
Right?
So what they did was they said, okay, we're going to award punitive damages to send a message to McDonald's, and we're going to send them a message by costing them 2 days worth of coffee sales. 2 days, not 2 years,
right.
2 days worth of coffee
Just
sales. And
even.
That number was the seven-figure number that everybody hears about.
Wow.
Which, by the way, was later reduced by the appellate court, which is also another piece nobody talks about. They just remember the number that the jury came back with. So, oops. Sorry, I'll talk louder and closer. I get excited about that. And so, you know, I think those are facts that people don't know about the McDonald's coffee story.
Yeah, I had no idea about all that.
It's just an urban myth.
It's not what the media presented at all.
No.
Well, and actually, there are even more facts that the things that really made the jury angry is, you know, McDonald's had 700 other incidents occur before this one.
Wow.
And didn't do anything about it. And basically what they were doing was heating this coffee to like 190 degrees because they had done some internal study saying most people that buy coffee here, they don't drink it until about 15 minutes later. And when we want them to drink their coffee, we want it to be nice and hot.
Right.
So they superheated it. And lo and behold, one of their engineers, one of their employees said, you realize if we heat this coffee up really hot, it's going to burn somebody if it spills on them. And that warning went unheeded. Those
right.
are the kind of facts that make juries angry.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened in that case.
Right, right. Wow, that's a huge difference than what I knew. It's definitely a different look at the hot coffee case than what everybody has come to believe. In that case, why do you think the Chamber of Commerce and others are so eager to point to cases like that as examples of lawsuit abuse?
Well, I think it's very simple. They want to try to limit the exposure and the risk that, that they might have in a very strong civil justice system. And if you can, it's unfortunate. You'll take a case like the McDonald's case, for example. It's really easy on first blush to say, hey, somebody spilled coffee and they got hurt and they got a recovery. That's crazy. That's, you know, it sounds crazy. And if you, with a very concerted effort, a very concerted marketing campaign, which has happened in this country, if you take what seems like it might be unreasonable and you run with it and you talk about how frivolous this is and you start putting other terms on it like jackpot justice, you eventually start eroding away people's faith in the system and what I guess the hope is, I don't know exactly what the motivation is behind these campaigns, but maybe the hope is that when juries are seated in these cases, that they have a negative view of the case before it even begins.
Right, to begin with.
And you know, I don't know, Lindley, if you want to add anything to that, but it's unfortunate that it's been a systematic campaign in this country to try to make the civil justice system look like something it is not.
Right. Well, that's why I have this show, I think. Letting everybody speak their voice. Go ahead.
It is a systematic campaign, and it's a systematic campaign that has nothing to do with small businesses in America. Small businesses who operate responsibly in America have insurance policies, and that protects them and the assets of that business against any negligent act that anybody in that business might commit. So they're not the ones behind it. The ones behind it are the really, really big businesses, primarily the insurance industry, which is one of the wealthiest industries in the world. And when they decide to launch a campaign, because they can figure out a way to launch a campaign that might cost them less in terms of jury verdicts and so forth, they have resources that are virtually unmatched to do so.
Right.
And so big insurance is behind a lot of this. Big insurance doesn't care if small businesses and individuals lose their Seventh Amendment right to jury trial. Big insurance would like to see that happen, to tell you the truth. They already cover under their policies as little as they possibly can. They raise their premiums even when they claim that they've that legislation that they've managed to pass is going to decrease insurance premiums. They take every advantage to maximize their profits. And, of course, as a business model, well, that's their business model.
Right.
But we as Americans, we want to see all businesses held responsible when they commit misconduct. And you only need to talk to folks about what's happened on Wall Street over the past few years to see that Americans don't want Wall Street or any other business entity to be able to run roughshod over the American laws. We want everyone to be bound by the laws, individuals and small businesses and big companies alike. And if we all play by the rules and have a good, strong civil justice system, it's just not a problem.
Right. We see a lot of lawyers advertising on TV and in a number of other ways as a means of reaching prospective clients. Is that something that trial lawyers are encouraged to do?
It's not. But I will tell you this. What a lot of people don't realize is that most trial lawyers we're just small business people like everybody else. A law practice is nothing more than a small business. And the reality is that all businesses have done a great deal more advertising in the last couple of decades than they ever did before that. And there are all kinds of new ways to advertise that didn't exist years ago. And unfortunately, not all advertisements are in good taste. And that's not just for lawyers, that's for anything. So it's unfortunate that there are lawyers whose ads don't reflect well on other lawyers and on trial lawyers specifically. We try to speak out against that, and we try to emphasize to our members and to lawyers in general that the dignity of our profession is based in part on the public perception of our profession.
Right.
But, you know, for every person who sees a tasteless, inappropriate ad on television or on the side of a bus or on a bus stop, just remember the trial lawyer you actually know. It's probably not that individual. And you may know a trial lawyer or you may know a lawyer. And I hope that despite all the advertising that goes on and despite some tasteless advertising, that when people think about their lawyer or the lawyer they know, that they have a positive impression of that person.
Thank you. As trial lawyers, who do you represent?
We represent individuals and small businesses. Actually, we represent anyone. Anyone who has been harmed in some manner or fashion and is seeking redress or justice, that's who we represent. And it covers anybody. Like I mentioned earlier, not only have I represented a number of individuals over the years and small businesses over the years, but I've also represented government entities, cities, counties, states, in some circumstances. So from my perspective, I am a trial lawyer, and I represent people that have been harmed and that need redress for that harm.
Any other answers to that?
Well, and when Darren says we represent anybody, let me assure you that there is no double standard. My primary field of specialty is legal malpractice. And as a legal malpractice lawyer, I bring claims on behalf of people who have been the victims of the negligence or intentional wrongdoing of lawyers. We have to hold ourselves to the same standards that we hold everybody else to, and we do because we believe in the system. And so despite being a legal malpractice lawyer, and despite the fact that most of my claims are against lawyers, some of whom have been members of my organization,
right.
I've been elected president of the Trial Lawyers Association. And I think that's a tremendous statement about the conviction that lawyers have, that everyone should be entitled to the same measure of justice.
I agree. And being that you mentioned the GTLA again, let's move back to the association and look ahead towards the coming year. What are your goals as president of the GTLA?
Well, I am very excited about this year coming up because we have a lot of work to do in the legislature. And in order to prepare for that, I am trying to maximize our membership all over the state of Georgia. And among all groups from all different walks of life, I am traveling around the state of Georgia, meeting with lawyer groups in towns and talking to them about joining GTLA and about being active locally and in their communities and with their legislators. Because I believe that if we all start talking about the Seventh Amendment right to trial by jury, and if we help educate our friends and neighbors and families about that very important constitutional right, that we can overcome anything that's thrown at us in the legislature or anything that's thrown to us administratively. We can overcome those who would attack the right to civil justice if people really understand that it's a constitutional right.
That's great. It sounds like you're going to have your hands full.
Well, I expect I will. I already do. That's all right.
Darren, I see that in attrition to being the president-elect, you're also the legislative committee co-chair. What are some issues that you anticipate the General Assembly will consider in 2015?
Yeah, I've mentioned a number of them already, but the bills like the Patient Injury Act, that's going to come, that is not something that is going away. That will come back during the next session, and it will be discussed, and I'm sure that will be one of the major issues that will be dealt with. Mm-hmm. Also, there are a couple of nursing home bills that will be addressed during the session that we're anticipating as well. The mandatory arbitration that I talked about earlier. There's also a push to do away with something that's called negligence per se as it relates to nursing homes. And basically what that means is if there's a law or a regulation that applies to an entity or a person or what have you, in this case nursing homes, and they violate that law or that regulation, they can be held liable civilly for that.
Wow.
And so there's a push to do away with all of that. Hey, we can break the law. We can violate the law. There's no civil liability under those circumstances. There's also, I mentioned earlier, that discovery limitations bill. That will come back up and will be discussed as well. In fact, I think there's an effort underway to try to have some discussions about that over the summer. You know, to see if that might be able to be addressed or there's some compromise reached in that regard. The problem with the discovery limitations bill is it literally shifts costs from those who are producing the information to those who are asking for the information, which you can imagine how that drives up the costs of
sure.
litigation for plaintiffs, especially individuals and small businesses who might not have the resources to pay for that. It also very much weakens or attempts to weaken what the judges can and cannot do if there's a situation where there's a dispute about discovery and information is not being produced. And the reason this is so important is, I touched on this earlier, and the reason it's so important is because in civil litigation, discovery, learning the information, is really what the cases are all about.
Right.
That's the only way to get to the truth and mm-hmm. a just verdict at the end of the day. And so if you don't have the information, it's very difficult to do that.
Right.
That bill makes it very difficult to get the information. There's also a bill that we anticipate will come up, and it's dealing with a sovereign immunity of cities and municipalities. And essentially what that proposed legislation would do would mean no one could ever sue a municipality or a city for any wrong that they did.
So they're above
did.
The law?
Exactly.
Wow.
It's that old theory of the king can do no wrong.
Right. That's scary, actually. Go ahead.
So those are just some of the things.
Well, it is scary. And this push for immunity is something that we're seeing from all sides. And Darren touched on it earlier, but the reality is that we have to have our lobbyists at the Capitol reading every bill every morning to make sure that some immunity for one industry or one entity or governmental agency even isn't slipped somewhere into a bill mm-hmm. that doesn't come through the Judiciary Committee, where we expect bills to come from that
right.
pertain to the judicial system, right? It can come through any committee down there. And if you don't have somebody watching carefully every day what's going on down there, it can slip right by you. And this immunity push is really disturbing, and it's frightening. And I don't think that most Georgians understand what immunity really means, and it means exclusion from the Seventh Amendment standard of jury trial for disputes.
Wow. Wow. So, yeah, if you have a little case slip through, then that could just do a domino effect and allow a lot more companies and more cases to go through as well.
Absolutely. A little immunity here and there, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden you don't have a jury trial system anymore.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
And I don't think people understand these immunity bills are introduced every single year. Every single session, there are a number of immunity bills that are introduced. And you have to be vigilant in your lookout to try to find those.
Wow.
So they don't get by.
And it's not just the traditional forms of immunity that you're seeing. But it's not just the large scale, the MARTA immunity that Darren talked about earlier, or it's not just immunity for cities, but it's a lot of the more innocuous bills that end up really carrying a lot of weight and a lot of immunity you wouldn't expect. We had a skydiving immunity proposed
oh, wow.
this year. We had immunity for cemetery owners. We had immunity for bake sales. There's all sorts of you know, everybody wants
Sorry,
immunity. And no, because it really
crazy.
Is a laughable concept.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see more and more of these every year. And it's really just something that we have to fight back against every day and really work harder than anybody else to educate them on
sure.
why immunity is such an issue and,
right.
and why it is so much more than meets the eye. And a lot of times it doesn't come into play until somebody does get hurt and they have no avenue to seek justice and to get recourse. And that's excuse me. And that's really why it's so important to do what we do.
Good. This is awesome. I love this. I love learning a lot of this stuff. Well, it was only a few years ago that our state's legislature passed a cap on damages in medical malpractice cases. Is that still the law?
It is not the law, thankfully. Our Supreme Court here in Georgia unanimously ruled that provision was unconstitutional.
Good.
And unfortunately, the business interest essentially and the medical interest in Georgia really fought hard and made a strong push to try to achieve these caps on damages. And unfortunately, there was a lot of misinformation that was put forth in front of the legislature and actually out in the public to try to persuade people that hey, that would be a good idea.
Right.
But it is an incredibly horrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
To try to cap what damages are in any particular case. And all of the statistics that were used to try to support these caps turned out to be just incorrect. You know, all of the benefits that were claimed, that, for example, that there would be more doctors coming into the state. Actually, there have been more doctors that have come into the state after the caps were struck down than before the caps. There was also an argument that, hey, that the insurance premiums would be better for the medical profession if these caps were in place. That did not happen. It did not materialize. And,
right.
and a number of the other arguments just did not happen. And the problem that you have whenever you try to cap damages in any kind of case is you're only harming those people that have the most serious and most significant injuries at the end of the day.
Well, right.
That's one of the greatest groups or the largest groups that you are harming with caps on damages, because you're saying, okay, a life is only worth X, or someone who has a severe brain injury that's going to need medical care for the rest of their life, I'm sorry, you can only recover this amount.
And, right.
And it doesn't
right.
matter how significant your injury is. That is just an incredibly unfair and unjust system, and and thankfully the Georgia Supreme Court recognized that.
Good. It seems like your opposition to proposals like caps on damages and forced arbitration stem from your belief in the Seventh Amendment. We've made that clear today. What exactly is the Seventh Amendment, and why is it included in the Bill of Rights? Lily?
The Seventh Amendment, right to trial by jury, was adopted by our forefathers as the best way to resolve disputes. It doesn't mean that juries are always right. It just doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can look out of all of the thousands of cases decided by juries every year and say, this one was wrong or that one was wrong. But there is no better system. There's nothing that's more accurate. There's nothing that produces on a more regular basis a more accurate result. And these caps and these limitations on mm-hmm. juries, all they do is prevent juries from being able to exercise their own wisdom that's mm-hmm. fit to the facts and evidence that they heard. And they're in the interests of no citizens, no small businesses. They might be in the interests of insurance companies.
Sure.
But as Darren said, they're not even in the interest of insurance companies a lot of times.
Right.
And so the Seventh Amendment right to trial by jury is just as important as the First Amendment right to freedom of press, the Second Amendment right to guns. And I could go through all the amendments, but you get my point.
Yes.
But people don't understand why it's so important, and
right.
they forget that it is a constitutional right. And here in Georgia, our Constitution goes one step further. Our Constitution says the right to trial by jury shall be inviolate. That's strong language mm-hmm. for legal language. That means
untouchable.
That's absolutely untouchable. And so, you know, you would think that we would not have to fight these battles. You would think that everyone would understand, legislators and otherwise, that these rights can't be touched. Don't tread on me, as they say.
Right.
but that's not the case. And that's why we have a job to do here at GTLA.
Right. I'm so glad we're here discussing it as well and getting the word out this way. What is one lesson, and I'm going to start with you, Chris, put you on the spot. What is one lesson that you have learned in your legal career so far?
What? I didn't know you were a lawyer, right?
As the only non-lawyer at this table, I actually took a different path. I'm the only one that wanted to be a lawyer when I was in college.
Oh, that's funny.
And I got bit by the political bug when I was starting in school and ended up going down that path for a while. And so I actually never showed up for my LSAT and didn't go to law school. But I've learned a lot from the perspective of a non-attorney working for an organization like GTLA. And what, frankly, has been the most surprising to me is how much misinformation there is about what trial lawyers do, about who they represent, about what the mission of a group like GTLA is.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in a very conservative background with a conservative family and a lot of conservative friends, you know, you don't always hear the truth about things like trial lawyers because of the misinformation that's been spread by really strong groups like the Chamber of Commerce. And so what I've learned is that there's so much more than meets the eye, especially with a group who does such incredible work as trial lawyers and as GTLA. And it's really sort of put me on a soapbox with my friends and family to sure. try to educate them more about the issues. But there's a lot of work to do, and we're just getting started.
And we'll have you on next time, and I'll read your bio as well so I could learn a little more about you. Lindley, one lesson that you've learned in your legal career.
You know, I think that there are so many people and businesses that deserve good legal representation, and there are so many hurdles that must be overcome mm-hmm. in order for lawyers to provide good legal representation, that I have just been honored during my career to know so many hardworking and honest lawyers who throw themselves into their careers. They say the law is a jealous mistress because it takes so much time and effort to do a good job for clients. And although I am a legal malpractice lawyer, mm-hmm. and so I handle claims against lawyers who make mistakes and occasionally intentional misconduct, the fact is that what I've learned is that the vast majority of lawyers are committed to their clients, and they work hard to earn justice for them. And I think that one of the misconceptions about trial lawyers is that trial lawyers are political creatures that are politically motivated at all times. I think that people at both ends of the political spectrum respect the Constitution. And it doesn't matter whether you're talking about constitutional conservatives or whether you're talking about liberal people who understand the importance of protecting constitutional rights.
Right.
When it comes to the right to trial by jury, we are should be all on the same page.
Sure.
And I believe that trial lawyers fundamentally understand that and move on to the more important issues of providing the quality of legal representation that folks deserve.
That's good to know. That's good to know. Darren?
I'll tell you one of the things that I've learned, and I think it's an incredibly important thing, is that the civil justice system works. I have seen it firsthand for about 20 years mm-hmm. now. I've tried a number of cases over the years, and I can tell you there some of the greatest moments of my career, the most fulfilling moments of my career, have been when you're standing side by side with a client and representing their interests, and to have a verdict come back in their favor, and more importantly, when you can affect change. And
right.
and what I've learned is, with a good, strong, open, and fair civil justice system, you can actually affect change. You can make mm-hmm. things happen in a certain way that are better for everybody out there. And a great example that's going on right now is the GM recall. I don't know if you're familiar with mm-hmm. that, but you know there's several million GM vehicles that have been recalled due to a faulty ignition switch. Mm-hmm. All of that came from one lawsuit in Georgia.
Wow!
And it's a wonderful thing to be able to try to get people to act better and to do better. And if you can be a positive part in that, it's wonderful.
That's amazing. Well, we so appreciate everybody here today, and so glad that you're on our show, and we'd love to have you back as well. Tell our listeners, Darren, how they can find out more about you and the GTLA as well.
Well, you can find out more about GTLA at our website. It's gtla.org.
Okay.
And there's tons and tons of information on the website on you know, anything that you need to know to find out about the organization is there.
Okay.
And as far as me, you can learn a little bit more about my law firm at www.hpllegal.com.
So. Okay. Thank you. And Lindley?
I also commend the website for learning more about GTLA.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that I would encourage folks to reach out to GTLA if they have opportunities that may present themselves for speakers, whether in schools or civic organizations. The Georgia Trial Lawyers Association can provide speakers to talk about the Constitution,
Wonderful.
You know, sometimes we go out on Constitution Day to the schools and talk to schools about the Constitution, and we can do similar presentations for civic organizations and whatnot.
Fantastic.
And also with any questions that folks might have, you can contact us through gtla.org. As for me personally, my website is linleyjones.com. My name's spelled L-I-N-L-E-Y, jones.com. And I can be reached that way.
Thank you. All right. And that does it for us here today at the Atlanta Legal Experts Radio Show. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to being back next week with some more legal expertise, of course, from the Atlanta Volunteer Lawyers Foundation. This is Emily Rowell with AttorneyOfficeSpace.com signing out.